quick. If you are not Asian American, not Asian American, what's the first thought that comes to mind about people who are? Is it that they are inscrutable math geeks with bowl haircuts, you know, the model minority? Okay, if you are Asian American, if you are Asian American, have you suffered stupid assumptions like that one I just described? Or stupid questions like, what's a good place to eat in Chinatown? And do you know Kung Fu? Well, the perceptions and realities of three Asian Americans play out in Don Lee's new novel, The Collective. In it, Eric, Joshua, and Jessica all meet at a small liberal arts college in Minnesota in 1988. Eric, an aspiring author, Jessica, an artist, Joshua, a writer and provocateur, challenging others to see the racism around them. They meet up years later in Cambridge, Massachusetts, where they form a large support group, the Asian American Artist Collective.
I felt a remarkable accord with this group, indeed, as if we were brethren and sistren, a family. With them, I did not have to explain or justify myself or worry about how I was being perceived. I could just be. No one questioned my origins. No one recoiled at the sight or thought or smell of my otherness. No one needed lessons on how to use chopsticks. There was something to be said, I had to concede, for sticking to your own kind.
But is that support group supportive or strangling? Is Joshua an activist or a troubled young man? The Collective was a pick for Entertainment Weekly's Must List. It's a terrific read, and author Don Lee joins us in the studio. Welcome.
Thank you. Great to be here.
Start with this idea that, you know, all three of your characters are considered Asian American by others looking at them, but in fact they are very different.
Yeah, it's a strange and really broad rubric, especially these days when you include South Asians, Indians, and Pakistanis as well. It's an odd category, and I think that it's one that's probably too broad.
We'll stay with the East Asians. Eric is third-generation Korean-American. He grew up in Mission Viejo, California. Asian is commonplace. He thinks of himself as American as anyone else. Joshua was abandoned at a Korean orphanage. He's adopted by well-to-do, bright Cambridge, Massachusetts intellectuals, and we can see immediately he feels sort of a disconnect from them. Jessica is second-generation Taiwanese, raised in upstate New York. Her parents want her to be a doctor. She wants to be an artist. So each of them have some similarities in the way the world sees them, but many differences in who they are.
I think that it's probably something that most people who aren't Asian American don't really recognize in terms of generational differences. I'm third generation Korean American and mostly from California, although my father was in the State Department, so I bounced around a lot overseas as a kid. But really, I didn't think about my ethnicity until I moved to Boston back in 1984 to attend graduate school at Emerson College. And it was only here that my questions about identity really arose, because here it seemed that there was that kind of segregation in terms of race. People actually did say things to me. I had these encounters that were shocking to me.
Like what? Like what?
Just walking through a crowd of people, there was a bunch of guys there, and one of them said to me, directly to my face, he said, "Did you know it's National Hate Chinese Week?"
Oh,
you know, things like that happened. And coming from California, where you have so many Asian Americans, you know, I never expected that.
Well, but so that goes to some of the racism that the characters see and feel. But what about who gets to write about race? Early on when they're in this school in Minnesota, Joshua, in a writing class, excoriates a young white woman because she wrote a story based in China. He says it's maudlin, lugubrious, exploitative piece of tripe. He talks that way. But Eric, who's, you know, more like you, third generation, is actually thinking, wow, that's really well written. Mm-hmm. Why can't she write that? And Joshua says, you can't write about the Asian experience unless you are Asian. In fact, he calls Hemingway and O'Connor racist. And so what are you saying there about who gets to write the story?
Well, I think that issue of cultural appropriation in terms of writing is very interesting. It's one that's heatedly debated. Here, I'm really more interested in what's happening within Asian American writers and artists. And I think that, you know, we're going through this transitional period, and we're all asking ourselves several questions. You know, if you're an Asian American writer, do you always have to have race as your subject? Do you have to have
That's a flip side of, should anyone else write about it? And should Asians only write about
it? Right, exactly. Yeah. Do you have to have all your characters Asian American? If you don't, is that race betrayal? And if you keep on doing that, are you limiting yourself? Are you ghettoizing yourself and your audience or even perpetuating stereotypes? And so these are, the arguments that they have within the collective here.
Well, and as you said, authors are having, and you're right in the middle of it because you're writing a book that's filled with Asian American characters. So are you choosing that? Is that your answer, that you think that that is what you should do?
From a personal point of view, I think that we should be able to do anything that we want to. And actually, I think that carries through as well to white writers. If they want to write from a different racist point of view, that's fine with me, too. I've written stories about a chair maker, a sculptor. I am not a chair maker or a sculptor, but I believe that if I do enough research and am true to those characters, and then I have a right to do that. And so why can't that extend across other boundaries as well? But, I think that there are many people who would adamantly disagree with that.
And your characters will disagree with everyone about everything because mm-hmm. they are college students right in the 80s, 90s, when that was what was happening at schools. The Boston Globe Review is by the editor of Granta.
Mm-hmm.
And, he points out that this is when, kids were tearing up the academic canon. And I'm just going to read a little bit here about how Eric describes it. He says, during our 4 years at school, we'd read Foucault, Hegel, Derrida. We would lap up the lingua franca of pseudo-intellectualism, sling around words like synecdoche, hyperbole, ontology, eschatology. It just goes on and on. We would graduate as nihilistic, atheistic, anarchistic, moralistic, tree-hugging, bohemian, Marxist snobs, and we'd love every minute of it. So your students are in the middle of this, sort of chewing up the academic scenery.
Yeah, I was poking a little fun at McAllister College. That's where it takes place, and I taught there for a year. And and I actually love the students there because they were so earnest and sincere, but it's absolutely true that they really lapped that stuff up.
Well, and part of it was tearing down sort of the all-white male academic structure that had been put up.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I mean, in their eyes, everything is racist, everything is sexist.
Well, I'm wondering if this is resonating with listeners. I said one of Don Lee's characters in the collective was a provocateur. I actually mangled the word, but should, as he wants, Asian Americans see the world through a race prism? Others do. A guy in a passing car once asked our Japanese American producer, Emiko, where's the best Chinese restaurant? Your thoughts, facebook.com/hereandnowradio. Back in a minute, Here and Now. It's Here and Now, and we're speaking with Don Lee, whose new novel, The Collective, explores the lives of three young Asian Americans, Eric, Joshua, and Jessica, who form the fictional Asian American Artists Collective in the very real city of Cambridge, Massachusetts, to counteract stereotypes about Asians. For instance, that they're either sex objects, like the geisha, or asexual, like Mr. Sulu or Charlie Chan. But Don Lee, the conversations between the Asian Americans in your book reveal they have some stereotypes, too. For example, what phrase does Joshua use to describe Asian women who date white men?
Yellow cabs.
Is that a phrase really used?
It's a phrase I made up, although I think that it might be used in California by some people, but I did make up a lot of the terms.
Well, tell us about that, because I came away thinking, wow, there's a lot of name-calling here. I mean, we've heard banana mm-hmm. for somebody who's accused of being white on the inside, yellow
on the
outside.
There's also rice chaser, which is a white man who dates Asian women.
So that's really used.
That is actually really used.
What is that conversation like within the Asian American community?
Well, especially with Asian men, there's a real resentment that Asian women seem mostly to date white guys. And I was very interested in a New York Times article that came out earlier this year. And what it reported is that Asian Americans seem to be bucking a trend now, that instead of marrying interracially, there are more and more that are marrying each other. But for a long time, there has been this thing that with the perception that Asian women seem to date only white guys, and then also that Asian guys seem to have a fetish for blonde white women.
Well, and further, Asian women are eroticized, in the imagination. Asian men are reduced and
emasculated.
And that brings us to the character, I think it's Long Duk Dong,
mm-hmm.
in John Hughes' film 16 Candles. There's a scene in which every Asian male in the room when that character comes up remembers a time when somebody, you know, called him the donger, you know. Did you have that experience?
I didn't, because I was a little older when it came out. But I remember, I mean, you know, I actually side with Eric's reaction on this, that when I saw the movie, I thought it was pretty hilarious.
Well, describe for people who hadn't seen it. Who was that character and
what did that
mean?
If you remember with 16 Candles, there were a bunch of high school kids, and there was this one foreign exchange student. He was ridiculed and just kind of became the, you know, fool. And he was portrayed in probably the most familiar stereotypes possible.
Just for those who haven't seen the movie, let's just listen to a little of this character in 16 Candles.
What's happening, hot stuff?
His name is Long Duk Dong.
What?
Long Duk Dong. He came down with Grandma and Grandpa Baker. He's an exchange student that's living with them.
Yeah, well, he's totally bizarre.
He is not. He is a very sweet boy.
Just hope you bring the sheets and mattresses after he leaves.
And then there's another touchstone for the group, Vincent Chin.
That incident actually did huge effect on me, because I was college age at that time. I think that was in 1982 that that happened. But, you know, starting around 1980 or so, that was the whole period of Japan bashing. And it was principally because of the Japanese auto industry, but there was the whole kind of tenor of Japan is buying America's soul. And so, you know, in that particular incident, there was a Chinese-American, Vincent Chin, and he was just going to a bachelor party and got into a fight with two laid-off auto workers who beat him to death and then never spent a day in jail for it.
If you put several Asian-American young men in a room, as you do in the book, would they all know that name and would all have the same kind of dagger to the heart that it seemed to have for you?
Yeah, sure they would.
So you take us into this mindset, and yet what are you saying in the end? Now, we have to be careful here. We don't want to give anything away, but this sort of force that this group becomes, let's just say it dissipates.
Mm-hmm.
So what are you saying in the end about the attempts of these young Asian Americans to sort of to raise awareness about the racism that they feel, to make their mark, to make some sort of a change? What are you saying?
First, I'm exploring the whole issue of friendships, and that's primarily how I went into this book. I was just thinking about how friendships, they form and they wane. Then through it, when you think back on your life and you think there was a particular group that you were very close to and you really believed at the time, we are going to be friends forever. You couldn't imagine that it'd ever break apart. But inevitably, these groups do. And then you go on to another group. And it makes you feel, when you think back on them, you're sort of inspired and enlivened by the camaraderie that you have, but you also are sad that they faded away. And so that's the first thing. But then eventually what I'm looking at here is I'm leaving the reader hopefully with some questions, which is this a good thing to do, that if you're basing these relationships on race, or should you be trying to transcend that?
By the way, we just want to point out, hilarity also ensues quite frequently throughout the book, including towards the end where there's, we won't again give it away, but there's an art show and there's a disgruntled Cambridge City Council member who breaks, well, let's just say some dildos off of sculpture and puts them in his pocket. And that's based on a real-life incident.
It sure is. It happened in 1994 to an artist friend of mine. His name is Hans Evers.
But you get to explore in that whole scene the idea of sexuality and Asian Americans.
Yeah. One of the comments I remember with my first book, The Collection Yellow, and my father read it, and pretty much the only thing he ever said about it was, there's a lot of sex in here. And I tend to have a lot of sex in my books, and people ask me why. And it really goes, I think, with trying to be a little subversive or transgressive with that stereotype that Asians are not sexual beings. And that's the image that's projected in movies and TV shows and commercials. And,
they're somewhat removed.
Mm-hmm. Right.
and aloof. Yeah. But you turn that on its head. I mean, there are so many different avenues you go down. I just want to touch on one last one that will affect a lot of people, I'm imagining. Joshua, you'd have to say the most troubled character, is adopted.
Mm-hmm.
What are you saying about parents who are white adopting Asian children?
You know, I know several people who were adopted by white parents. And, you know, I'm not going to say that it's a good thing or a bad thing, but I will say that they have real problems in trying to secure some sort of identity for themselves.
Well, and by the way, you add another wrinkle, which is that Joshua goes back. Joshua, this fierce defender of his Asian background, goes back to mm-hmm. Korea, where he doesn't fit in. And mm-hmm. people tell him, you know, people disdain him, tell him he doesn't speak Korean well enough. He gets sort of the reverse racism that he feels in the U.S. So in both countries, he's feeling it.
Yeah, he goes back and he's not Korean enough. And, you know, I've also my friends have had that experience as well.
Yeah. Well, that's Don Lee. He takes us fully into the Asian American experience, those of us not already living it, in his new novel, The Collective. Don, thanks so much.
Thank you.
And one final note today, our intern, Joe Ninatali, is off to Seattle with AmeriCorps to volunteer for a city paper for the homeless. In other words, he's trying to make us all look bad. What have we done lately? Congrats, Joe, and thank you so much for your work. Here Now is a production of WBUR Boston in association with the BBC World Service and PRI. I'm Robin Young. Please join us again here and now.
Funding for Here and Now comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software. Find over 200 job openings at MathWorks.com.
PRI, Public Radio International.